Good morning. This is Leading Age Maryland Tuesday Stand Up. We welcome Sheila Salisbury, a claims and risk management consultant from RCM&D, to continue the series on managing risks. And today we're going to focus on elder abuse.
Good morning, everybody. Today we're going to talk about the different types of elder abuse. We're going to touch on the Elder Justice Act only as it relates to skilled facilities. And then we're going to go through some scenarios of abuse, and you can share some more stories if you'd like. So first of all, some startling statistics. According to the U.S. Administration on Aging, an estimated 700,000 to 1 million elders in the United States annually suffer mistreatment at the hands of others. Research suggests that 1 in 10 Americans over the age of 60 has experienced elder abuse, neglect, and that people with dementia are at a higher risk for abuse. About two-thirds of elder abuse victims are women. From now until 2030, every single day, about 10,000 baby boomers will celebrate their 65th birthday. The fastest growing population is people 85 years and older, so this problem isn't going away. Studies have shown that victims of financial exploitation and elder abuse or neglect have been found to have three times the risk of dying prematurely. Prior to the enactment of the Elder Justice Act, federal funding for programs and justice regulations was not available. Now, community education and awareness campaigns, along with training for law enforcement personnel and adult protective services, are available to millions of seniors across the United States. The Elder Justice Act was enacted as part of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act and signed into law in March of 2010. The Elder Justice Act is designed to provide federal resources to help prevent, detect, treat, understand, intervene, and where appropriate, prosecute elder abuse, neglect, and exploitation. Under the Elder Justice Act, both the individual and the facility must report reasonable suspicion of a crime as determined by state and local law against a long-term care resident to local law enforcement and CMS. And there's strict timeline reporting within 2 hours of forming suspicion if the event results in serious bodily injury within 24 hours otherwise, and if you fail to report, you're going to face some stiff penalties. To whom do we report abuse, and how do we do that? Abuse reports should be submitted to the state survey agency and local law enforcement, and reporting of abuse may be done by telephone, text, email, fax, or other means as long as you get it reported. So if you're a facility, skilled facility, and you receive over $10,000 in federal funds annually, you have to report under the Elder Justice Act. And you must report to the Secretary of Health and Human Services and local law enforcement any reasonable suspicion of a crime against a resident. So what are the types of abuse that we need to be reporting? Physical abuse, financial abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, and self-neglect. So physical abuse is a non-accidental use of force that results in bodily injury, pain, impairment, including being slapped, burned, cut, bruised, or physically restrained. And sexual abuse is non-consensual sexual contact of any kind. Emotional abuse is the willful infliction of mental or emotional anguish by threat, humiliation, intimidation, or other abusive conduct. Neglect is the deprivation of services deemed necessary for maintenance of physical and mental health, including water, food, clothing, and any other necessities of daily living. Self-neglect is characterized as the behavior of an elderly person that threatens his or own health or safety. They may be unaware of this. Financial exploitation is probably what we see the most, and it refers to the act of or the process where an individual or a caretaker takes advantage of an older adult for monetary benefit. Okay, so we have a few scenarios to go through and to figure out if we need to report this under the Elder Justice Act. Now, remember, that just is only for skilled facilities, not independent or assisted. So an elderly female resident with dementia reports that a man has been entering her room at night. During one of her 2 weekly showers, a nursing assistant discovers blood in her underwear and bruising on the resident's thigh. Sexual assault exam reveals that she's got tearing in the perineal area and some semen. Under the Elder Justice Act, we absolutely need to report that. Next scenario is an elderly gentleman in your facilities known to have substantial assets and handles his own finances. Staff comes to suspect a woman who has recently befriended him and who visits regularly and tries to persuade him to give him her money. The resident confides to his staff member that he's embarrassed that he may be running low on his money. So under the Elder Justice Act, we definitely need to report that financial exploitation. A male resident in a long-term care facility has bruising about the head and neck, and an investigation reveals that the man was struck by his caregiver because the patient bit the caregiver. The aide reports this, that this was the only way that she could stop his biting. So under the Elder Justice Act, that is staff abuse, and we absolutely must report. Next one is a little murky. We have a facility that investigates a suspicious bruise on the hand of a female resident. Potential witnesses are interviewed, but no one really reports observing any incident that may have caused the bruise. Upon further discussion with some caregivers, it's learned that the resident has been observed periodically tapping the back of her hand against her wheelchair arm during music sessions. And the investigation concludes that the absolute cause of bruise cannot be determined with any specificity. So in that case, it's not necessary to report, but we might want to err on the side of caution and report because we can't conclude where that bruise came from. Okay, and the last scenario we have is that a female resident in a nursing home is a very angry and challenging resident to care for. She yells at the staff, calls them names, insults them. As a result, the staff avoid responding to her request for assistance to go to the toilet. This often results in her soiling herself and being left for long periods of time sitting in the soil. So under the Elder Justice Act, this is neglect, and we definitely need to report that. So defining financial abuse is sometimes difficult unless we actually see some kind of fraudulent deal happening. Families can be a great help or absolute savior, or some family members can actually be abusers themselves. As we said, most of the abusers happen to be someone that the resident knows, or either a caregiver, a family member, a friend, someone that they had trusted in the past. Dysfunctional families or functional families with some dysfunctional members will greatly increase the risk of financial abuse or loss. Blended families and late and late remarriages cause a lot of different set of difficult problems in and of themselves. Adult children, if they're involved and nearby, can help provide a safety net for seniors by monitoring their senior financial activity. This assumes a certain level of financial knowledge. We have to, know that the family member has integrity and is interested. Geography may make the monitoring more difficult, but a combination of maybe phone calls, emails, and Skype can help out with some of our senior residents. And as we know, some of our seniors create their own problems. Some may be bullheaded, uncooperative, bitter, or in any way dysfunctional that may drive their own lifesavers, their family and friends away. So it's important that we try to engage the families where we can, and sometimes have that important talk. At some time, we want to talk to the parents about estate planning, housing, money, driving, who's in charge of what and how we're going to work that out. I know a lot of times geography makes that very challenging, but the more the family is involved and a healthy, functional relationship is developed, the easier it is. So the 90% of the elder abuse and neglect is perpetrated, as I said, by someone we know, usually a family member, specifically grown children or their spouses. And so we have to, you know, try to look out for that. And I know it's difficult as administrators, but to try to be watchful of that. So I know the stresses of caregiving, particularly with long-term caregiving for someone whose problems may be demanding, can be overwhelming. New research reminds us that for some, even dementia caregiving can be well managed and yield some positive experiences. Many people who find themselves thrust in that caregiving role are ill-equipped to handle it. And many who never harm persons they are caring for instead, you know, it starts to take a terrible toll on their own physical and emotional health. And so these are some of the reasons why we're seeing an increase of elder abuse. Physical and emotional illnesses are more common, and these dedicated caregivers sometimes don't have the time or energy to attend to their own healthcare set of needs. So with that being said, I can tell you about a few scenarios that I have seen in some of my claims experience. We had at one of my facilities sort of a financial exploitation of an elderly male resident that was targeted. The facility was near a drugstore that are a strip center, which had a drugstore, a grocery store, and the like, a dry cleaners. And we had a bus, a shuttle that would go take the residents back and forth, you know, if they wanted to get their hair done or go grocery shopping. And this gentleman would go frequently to the grocery store. He happened to go on the same day each week and at a certain time within a specific period of time, and this man didn't really have any family around. So the staff started to notice that there was a young woman that was started to befriend him and visit him on a regular basis. And we did ask him, you know, after a while, you know, because he started to express some concern to our staff about the fact that she was always asking for money. And so as it turns out, you know, we did involve the police and called, you know, make sure we acknowledge the Elder Justice Act, but because it was skilled. But he actually had been taken in by a sort of like a band of gypsies. They would see him at the store and they would talk to him there. They figured out that he lived in, you know, the nursing home. He was, you know, highly independent. I mean, in the way that he could get back and forth. And so he started talking to them, and, you know, we found out, come to find out that she comes and visits him and starts to ask him for checks, and she's in need of money for her daughter who's gravely ill. And, you know, so those are the types of things that can happen, you know, relatively quickly just by something like that happening. You know, a band of gypsies is in town, they start to notice something, and then they, you know, jump on and that kind of a thing. So luckily it was caught, you know, before they were able to clean him out. But people are preying on, you know, our elder folks, and we really sort of have to try to watch, you know, what we can do as administrators, how we can help out. It's a difficult problem, elder abuse, and we have to work and do what we can. I know that families and caregivers and professionals all, you know, don't want to see anybody abused. So it's sort of a concerted effort. That's about all I have for you. If anybody wants to ask any questions or share a story, now would be the time to do that.
I am going to unmute everybody's line. So if you'd like to ask a question or share a story, please do so. Okay. Doesn't look like there are any questions. This call will be placed on our website later this afternoon, and you can go there if you want to share it with any colleagues or refer to it in the future. Thank you very much, Sheila, for sharing how to manage the risk of elder abuse today. And thank you all for participating. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.